Welcome to the Quill Fiction Story Guild podcast, a podcast exclusively for members of the Quill Fiction Story Guild. I'm Frances O'Rourke Dowell, and we're reading my work in progress friendship album, 1934. Thank you for joining us, and as always, thank you for being part of the Quill Fiction community. Now, on to the story. Chapter 29. Dorothy couldn't take much more of this heat. Every morning when she stepped outside, it wrapped its humid arms around her and then did its best to hold on for the rest of the day. She did what she could to keep the temperature down inside the house. She opened windows at night to let in the evening breeze and then closed them in the morning, drawing the curtains to hold some of that cool air inside. She hated to run fans. Wallace fussed if the electric bill was high. But these hot August days didn't give her much choice. Walking into the kitchen before church on Sunday, she found Wallace drinking hot coffee and didn't know how he could stand it. Coffee at 5:30 on an August morning was one thing, but at 8:45, the day heating up by the second? "You're going to overheat just like that truck of yours," she said as she walked into the kitchen, purse and gloves in hand. "And you need to put on your hat or else we're going to be late." Wallace gave her a long look, accompanied by a raised eyebrow as he appraised her from the kitchen table. "You're a fine-looking woman, Dorothy Johnson, but you henpeck worse than one of them leghorns out back. Leave me be. Besides, I think I'm going to just drop you off this morning. Maybe I'll come back for the service, but I think I'll skip over Sunday school, if you don't mind. I know enough about the Book of Revelation as a man needs to know, and mostly what I know is that whoever wrote it was crazy." "John of Patmos wrote it, and you better be taking what he says seriously," Dorothy scolded. "I don't need any heretics in this house." "Well, I don't need no crazy Greek telling me about dragons in the sky neither," Wallace retorted. "Besides, Sunday dinner at your mother's house is sufficient unto the day. If you don't see me at church, it's because I'm resting up to get ready." Dorothy slipped on a glove. "You act like it's a hardship going over to Mama's and eating her good food. That just goes to show that you are spoiled to death." "There's a price to be paid for all that good cooking. It's going to be a house full of women and me, and I won't be able to get a word in edgewise." "Albert will be there," Dorothy reminded him, "and Jasper."
"Albert talks more than the rest of them combined," Wallace said, "and Jasper just sits there looking antsy, like he's going to up and run off any second."
"He's a man with things on his mind." Wallace stood and stretched.
"Well, who don't these days? Jasper ain't special."
"He's the father of three of our grandbabies," Dorothy pointed out, pulling on the other glove. "That makes him special in my book." Wallace harrumphed and patted his pocket for his keys. "We best get going," he told Dorothy as he carried his coffee cup to the sink. "You can finish fussing at me on the way over."
"I don't even know why I'm bothering to go to Sunday school now," Dorothy said as she followed Wallace out of the house. "You've spoiled it for me. Now everything Brother Higgins says about Revelation is going to have me wondering if John was crazy."
"He sure says crazy things," Wallace said, "but it's only a problem if you take it as factual. If your view is that he's telling you a story, and the truth lies underneath the words, not on top of them, then it's all good."
Dorothy laughed. "Maybe you ought to be teaching Sunday school." By now, they'd reached the truck. Wallace gallantly opened the passenger door and offered Dorothy a hand up. She took it and continued.
"You could call it the good news according to Wallace Johnson." Wallace walked around to the driver's side and got in.
"I bet people would pay to hear what I have to say," he said after he'd settled into a seat and started the engine. "They'd come from miles around."
"I'll be sure to pass that idea on to Reverend Stackhouse," Dorothy told him.
"Tell him I'll tithe 10% of my profits to the church," Wallace said. "Maybe the good reverend can finally get that steeple he's all the time talking about." Dorothy didn't bother replying. Instead, she pulled her kerchief from her handbag and dabbed her forehead with it. Oh, this heat was just too much. And so was Wallace, but at least Wallace had his good points. She wasn't so sure she could say the same for August. Wallace was waiting in the churchyard after the service. He was dressed in his good pants and a white cotton button-up shirt that was starting to fray around the edges. Dorothy had been meaning to make him a new one, but she'd been so busy lately that most of her sewing and mending had been pushed to the side. She was diligently working on Jasper's Hands All Around quilt, which she wanted to finish before the weather turned. This past winter, when below freezing temperatures were expected, Jasper had slept on a cot next to the furnace in building number 5 so he could keep the fire stoked to prevent the pipes from bursting. All he'd had was an old blanket to cover up with, and that seemed a shame.
"Dorothy," her sister Ruth called as she came out of the church, "tell Mama I'll be a few minutes late, but I'll be there in time for dinner. I'm going to whip the cream for my cake at home. Easier than finding the room to do it in Mama's kitchen."
"Whipped cream in this weather?" Dorothy said when Ruth caught up with her. "It's too hot. You won't get a single peek."
"Miss Mamie told Nettie the secret, and Nettie passed it on to me," Ruth said. "You put the whipping bowl and the whisk in the icebox, and then you let them get as cold can be. The cream whips up just like that, whether it's a cool day or as hot as the inside of an oven."
Ruth paused and put a hand on Dorothy's arm.
"You're looking thin, sister. I think you must be working too hard."
"I'm working just hard enough," Dorothy assured her. "Besides, after all that baking I did in the spring, I could use to shed a few pounds."
Ruth laughed. "Baking's not the problem. Tasting what we bake is where we get into trouble." Her expression turned serious again.
"That still doesn't speak to the fact that you work an awful lot."
"It's only for a little while longer. I'll stop working at the Tarkingtons at the end of the month."
"Are you sure?"
Ruth sounded doubtful.
"Every time you talk about that woman, you make it sound like you've got her on a lifetime plan. After I teach her how to hem a handkerchief, I'm going to teach her how to stitch a baby's blanket. Once she learns how to make chicken soup, I'll show her how to make potato soup."
"It's always one thing leading to the next with this Mrs. Tarkington of yours."
"Did I tell you I finally met her husband last week?" Dorothy said, hoping to push the conversation down another path.
"I'd been so curious about him. Clearly the man's got money, and from what I understand, he grew up in a wealthy family, which Nina Tarkington surely did not."
"So he's a rich man who married a poor girl," Ruth said. "I wonder how they met."
"They met at a concert of all places. Mrs. Tarkington loves music, and her aunt saved up for a ticket so she could see some symphony in Columbus. Turns out her seat was next to Mr. Tarkington's, and the two of them got to chatting. The rest is history."
"She pretty?"
"Very pretty, especially when she spends a minute or two in front of the mirror."
Ruth nodded. "Sometimes I'll see a woman and think, if only she'd do something with her hair, make a little effort, she could be pretty as a picture. It's a shame to let good looks go to waste if you've got 'em."
"So what's this Mr. Tarkington like? Is he old? An old man will put up with all sorts of mess from a pretty young thing."
"He's not much older than she is, as far as I can tell."
Dorothy glanced over at the truck to see if Wallace was getting impatient. But he was deep in conversation with Percy Trumbull, so she continued with her report. Handsome, too, and he clearly finds his wife a delight, which is good, I suppose. Ruth laughed. It ain't bad. But he's indulgent of her poor housekeeping, Dorothy complained. I don't think he cares that the house is a mess or that his dinner is burned, but he will one day. Unless you show Mrs. Tarkington what she needs to do. Ruth shook her head. Dorothy, why do you think it's your job to save people? I've said it once, I've said it a million times, you care too much. There's no such thing as caring too much, Dorothy told her sister, even though she knew it wasn't true. Sometimes caring too much was the worst thing you could do for another person. Sometimes the best thing to do was to take a step back. And if she hadn't been so fond of Mrs. Tarkington, maybe she would have, but she liked the young woman. Besides, she was making good progress. When she'd started at the Tarkingtons back in June, why, Nina could barely boil water. She for sure couldn't make coffee or broil a piece of meat. And she was too all over the place to keep the house tidy, which even a woman who could afford a housekeeper needed to do. Slowly but surely, Dorothy had taken Nina Tarkington in hand and helped her come up with routines. Every morning, you need to start things off the same way, she'd instructed. That way it becomes habit. You don't even have to think about it. You just do it. Get up, wash your face, get dressed, get the baby dressed, take him downstairs and put him in his high chair, give him his bottle. Then you make the coffee. Dorothy had added one task to the list at a time. She'd even written a list for Mrs. Tarkington to check off, because nothing was more satisfying than checking off a list. To her surprise, the young woman had complied, marking off each item as it was done. She'd even taken to showing Dorothy the completed checklist as though she were a child showing her mother a good report card. Maybe that was it, Dorothy thought after she'd said goodbye to Ruth. She had started to think of Mrs. Tarkington, of Nina, as a daughter of sorts. Lord knew the woman needed a mother. But it was dangerous to think of the people you worked for as family. For the first 7 years that she worked for Bess, Dorothy had kept her distance. Oh, she and Bess had always gotten along, perhaps because they had a similar sense of humor and a straightforward way of talking to one another. But at the end of the day, Dorothy went home to her family and didn't give much thought to Bess's. That all changed when Mr. Wilcox died and Dorothy had started worrying about Bess and the girls day and night. Both Ruth and Wallace had fussed at her about it, but Dorothy had never been the sort who could temper the way she felt just because it was the sensible thing to do. Funny, she thought now as she made her way to the truck, though she certainly thought of Bess as a friend these days, she didn't have that family feeling anymore. Maybe you had to spend time in the same house to feel like family. You had to know all the little things about a person, like when they had a dentist appointment or woke up with a headache. When you only saw someone once a week in a group of other people, which was how it was these days with her and Bess, well, there were all sorts of things you didn't know and therefore couldn't care about. Dorothy knew plenty about Nina Tarkington. Knew just about everything that there was to know, she supposed. And just the way she had with Bess after Mr. Wilcox died, she felt sorry for the girl. A motherless child. What could be more heartbreaking? Come on, Slowpoke, Wallace called to her. Last thing I need is Miss Martina upset with me because you made us late to dinner. Funny how she never blames you for a thing. It's always me who's gone and messed things up. Dorothy almost said that wasn't the least bit true, but upon second thought, she realized it was a whole lot true. Martina had been tough on her children while they were growing up, but once they were grown, she treated them as shining examples of her own good mothering. If something went amiss, clearly it was someone else's fault. Martina was in fine form when Dorothy and Wallace arrived. She rarely went to church these days, saying that she had fully cleaved unto the Lord, and going to church was a kind of showing off. The real problem was that it bothered her back to sit for any length of time, and Reverend Stackhouse was known to stay in the pulpit for long stretches if he thought his flock was in need of revival. How lucky she was to have such a mother, Dorothy thought as she kissed Martina's powdery cheek and took in her familiar vanilla and cinnamon scent. The daughter of freed slaves, she hadn't had much schooling, but she taught herself and then her brothers and sisters to read, and she'd read every day to her own children from her small library of books. There were daily Bible readings, of course, but Martina had also read to them Treasure Island and The Swiss Family Robinson, as well as fairy tales by George MacDonald and the Brothers Grimm. When they were older, Martina introduced Dorothy and her brother and sister to Jane Eyre and Pride and Prejudice. It wasn't until Dorothy went to work herself that she understood how exhausted Martina must have been during those evenings in front of the fire, how it must have strained her eyes to read by lantern light.
"Dorothy, you're too thin," Martina said as she took a step away and examined her daughter. "Wallace, why aren't you making Dorothy eat more? You need to take better care of her."
"Mama, Wallace takes plenty good care of me," Dorothy insisted. "Why, he takes me out to dinner almost every Saturday night." Martina turned to Wallace.
"You trying to spend all your money before you die? What's that going to leave Dorothy with?"
Wallace leaned over and gave Martina a kiss on the forehead.
"Where's old Albert at, Miss Martina? I haven't talked to him in an age."
Before her mother could lodge another complaint against her husband's character, Dorothy took Martina's hand. "Tell me what I can do to help get dinner on the table, Mama." Martina motioned for Dorothy to follow her into the kitchen. Making her way through the crowded parlor, Dorothy knew that even if she felt motherly toward Nina Tarkington, she could never really step into a mother's shoes with the girl. Mothering took a lifetime of doing and fussing and pushing and pulling. Dorothy could certainly teach Nina some important skills and set her on the road to being a better mother and wife. If that took longer than Dorothy had planned, so be it. She wouldn't leave until Nina could manage on her own. She could give the poor girl that much. But nothing more.
Thanks for joining us on the Quilt Fiction Story Guild podcast. We're reading Friendship Album 1934, a novel by Frances O'Rourke Dow, a production of Milton Falls Media, Incorporated. Copyright 2022, all rights reserved. Until next time, this is Frances O'Rourke Dow. Thank you for joining us.